Okay, great. Hello, everybody. I think I'll try this one out. Can you all hear me okay? My name is Bethany Huang, and I actually have a couple of colleagues, theoretically, joining with me this afternoon. Oh, there's one, Eileen. You all met her just a minute ago. She introduced the justice campaign with your senators. And Mark, with a very hard-to-say last name, Mark Kirchgesner, will be coming through the door in about 5 seconds. Mark lives here in California. 3, 2, 1, Mark! All right. Mark is actually, how many of you all are from the Bay Area, or live in the Bay Area right now? Okay, Mark is your new best friend if you're interested in justice work, because he lives in the Bay Area as well. And he is our first church mobilization education staff person to not live in the Washington, D.C. area. So he is branching out and running things on his own here on the West Coast. So he has a huge job. And Eileen right now is based in Boston. She just finished Harvard Divinity School and just got married, like, what, 2 weeks ago or something like that, very recently, and will be moving down to D.C. next summer. And I live in the D.C. area in Northern Virginia, and I'm very excited to be here with you all today. And so let me just give you a little bit of a plan for our time together now. I'm going to walk you through some basics about International Justice Mission in particular and about justice ministry in general. And then I think the plan is to have Mark come up next, and he's going to give you some very clear action steps. So how do you engage this work? And I'm sure that's what you want to hear about more than anything. So I'll try to get out of the way as soon as possible. And then Eileen is going to give you some more teaching and resources on the whole issue of mobilizing your Congress people in particular, so that whole realm of action. And so, any other comments from the peanut gallery over there? Okay, great. So first of all, the biblical, I actually might skip through this because I think you all have been hearing a lot about the biblical mandate to seek justice, but I do want to point out here, I just love, you may have never noticed this before, I didn't notice it until I came on staff with IJM, but Micah and Matthew pretty much quote each other. Like, we all probably have heard this Micah verse too. He has told you what is good, what is the Lord required of you, to seek justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. But Jesus comes along and he's rebuking the Pharisees in Matthew. There's this section of the seven woes. He's saying, woe to Pharisees, you teachers of the law. And he gets down to this one section where he says, you have been tithing down to the most exact measure. You've even been tithing out your spices. Like, you've been following the law so carefully, but you've actually neglected the most weighty matters of the law. And he lists them in the same order, essentially, as Micah. Justice, mercy, and faithfulness to God. And I've always thought that was just incredibly powerful illustration of just the way that Scripture resonates with this call to do justice. And I think one of our biggest challenges as the body of Christ is to help other people understand that issues of justice and mercy are not kind of a side issue, that people who might have an interest in that, they can work on that on the side of the real work of sharing the gospel and doing evangelism. Evangelism, defined, is good news, bringing good news. And Jesus said that to bring good news, he says, I came to preach good news to the poor, to release the captives, to bring sight to the blind. And Micah says, he has told you what is good, to do justice, to love mercy. So I think there's a more whole understanding of even evangelism, of what it means to share the gospel with others, that includes at its beating heart these issues of justice and mercy, that they're not side issues. They're actually central to the heart of God and meant to be central to our lives, even of discipleship, to the way we understand what it means to follow Jesus. So just throw those up there for you as an encouragement. But again, I know that I don't want to repeat too much of what we've already been talking about today. So you heard Mark mention just a little bit ago these categories of alienation, deprivation, and oppression. Does anyone remember that? It was kind of at a... I just thought I'd give you that we have a couple of slides on this. This is something we like to teach about, and I'm showing this to you now so that you can internalize this and teach it to other people. Because one of the biggest steps of action that we need you all to take is to learn deeply and help other people go on this journey of learning with you. So on the one hand, we, for about 2,000 years as the body of Christ, have been seeking to obey Jesus' command to love your neighbor, and in particular to love your neighbor who is suffering because they've never heard proclaimed the gospel, so the verbal proclamation of reconciliation through Jesus Christ, so that they can have a relationship with God. And so this is the whole aspect of when you saw what Micah said and what Jesus said of walking humbly with God, of having faithfulness. And so this means that there are a huge category of people in our world who just simply don't have these basics of Bible study, of prayer meetings, of knowing what it is to follow Jesus. They don't have resources to help them learn how to be reconciled to God and to have a lifetime of walking faithfully. But then there's this next category. So if we think of that as like the category of alienation from God, this category of deprivation, where there are people who suffer because they just simply don't have the bare essentials of what it takes to live from day to day. And so if you look back again at that Micah and Matthew, the scripture verses where it said justice, mercy, and faithfulness, this would be the mercy category. People are deprived, and they need the body of Christ to bring them mercy. And that looks like bringing the needs where there is no food, where there's no clean water, where there's no medical help. There aren't, or perhaps someone is orphaned and they don't have parents, or they don't have just basic things like books. So illiteracy, all of these types of issues fall into this mercy category. And again, these aren't completely extricable from each other, but it's important to see the different kinds of categories of need in our world. And again, as Mark said, there's this third category of oppression, where there are neighbors in our world who are suffering simply because, not because they haven't heard the gospel or lack these basic necessities, but actually I haven't seen this. Where's Mark? Did Mark leave? Okay. Anyways, he there he is. He threw in a sorry. I was going through the slide and I'd never seen the slide with a picture on it before. So I was like, oh, what's the picture? But anyways, so there's a picture. Oh, I thought there was going to be, I'm sorry, I've messed everything up. But so there's this whole category of people who are suffering because they don't have, they have an oppressor. And so this category of oppression is really the frontier, we believe at IJM, for the church. If you look back through the history of the body of Christ for these last 2,000 years, over the last 50 years, you've seen a huge surge in mercy ministries, of bringing the basic necessities. But this whole frontier of justice is, we've barely even stepped into it yet, and we're still figuring out how do we fix broken public justice systems? How do we bring rule of law to the poor? How do we provide advocates for the poor who are being treated unjustly? And I'm going to skip through these slides because we've talked about the definition of injustice and the abuse of power and coercion and deception. You all can take a look at it if you want, but I'll keep plowing through these. And I think I'm also going to skip through a few more things here because I want to make sure we get to the meat and just show you right here. How do I get the slideshow back up? Okay, great. Thanks for everyone being patient. That one. And just hit this set. Okay, there we go. So at International Justice Mission, what we're trying to do is the casework of rescuing victims of injustice, but we're seeking to move the church to be, we just believe that God intends and is using the church as his primary agent of change in the world. And so we're trying to see the church moved into this frontier of addressing this fundamental need of many millions of people having a violent oppressor in their life and that oppressor needing to be restrained. So the way that we go about this is fourfold, and it's what you see behind me. So the first thing is always to just relieve the victim from the situation of oppression. So someone like Elizabeth, it's just very fundamental. Go undercover, you ask how old the person, in her case, with sex trafficking. You need to know what their age is. You need to know how much they're being sold for. And then you take the evidence to the police, and you wait with the police until they move. And if you want to hear incredible stories about sitting at police stations and through all hours of the night until they actually decide to move and to change people's lives based on the evidence you've brought them, you've got to go to Pranitha's session next hour. She just has incredible stories of her field staff just tirelessly, literally just not sleeping and just working around the clock to get a victim out of their situation of oppression. But the next thing is, again, you'll want to go hear Pranitha for this, but aftercare, making sure that you're not rescuing someone and then not having somewhere to take them. They need to go to a safe house that's locked down so that the perpetrator can't come back and re-victimize them. You need to be able to provide vocational training and education and counseling. We've had a lot of churches actually come alongside of us and help us build aftercare homes or help partner with other aftercare ministries already in existence. And it's just been an incredible need and so rewarding to see people's lives literally change just through getting to be in a safe place for years and come into a new life and a new place of healing. The third thing that we do as an organization is perpetrator accountability. And this is just an absolutely crucial piece. You can't just go buy out a slave, for example, from their situation of slavery, pay off the debt and get them out. It, first of all, just feeds money back into the slavery system, and it enables the slave owner to just go buy another slave and keep re-victimizing people. You need to, again, restrain the hand of the oppressor. And so and in a place like India, when you go hear Pranitha, you'll understand how laborious this work can be, because there may be very, very good laws on the books in countries all over the world against slavery and all different forms of violent injustice, but those laws are not being delivered to the poor, and they're not being upheld against oppressors. And so this is a huge piece that we need, as the church, need to be leaning on multinational governments to actually start holding powerful oppressors accountable for their crimes and to change the calculation of an entire system that thinks it's going to profit off of selling human beings to each other and change the way that they think about whether that's profitable or not. And once they start being held accountable and being put in jail and stopped from doing what they're doing, they're going to move on to something else. And so the fourth aspect of that is this overall structural prevention. We want to see transformation in an entire community. And we've seen that happen. Cambodia is an incredible case that I wish I could give you kind of the play-by-play. But the short of it is, when we first went into Cambodia, there was this one town where the entire town was dedicated to selling children. A few years later, that town is completely shut down. There are no more brothels in it at all. And the Cambodian National Police, who used to protect the brothels and take bribes and not protect children, are actually now being trained by IJM around the clock, and they are leading raids for us. They are starting to find places for us in Cambodia that we could have never found on our own. They're leading us to the raids now. So huge transformation in just a 5-year period. in Thailand, northern Thailand, we saw a 90% reduction in the sale of minors for sex. It's just absolutely mind-blowing in just a few-year period. So this model works, but we're rolling it out in country after country and needing to see it multiply to more and more places. The need is big. So the last thing I'm going to get out of the way here and bring Mark up. Just wanted to give you a little bit of a visual about where we are in the world. So our HQ is over there in Washington, D.C., and then Mark is over here in California. I know, we need a dot for Mark. Sorry, for Northern California. And we have a, Mark does church mobilization work, but then we have a separate person who works on raising money in California. And then we have two of those same types of people up in the Pacific Northwest. Actually, only one. We're looking for the church mobilization person for the Northwest. So that's a hint to any of you who would like to move to Seattle or know someone who would be a great fit for us in Seattle or Portland. That's a need. And we have these affiliate offices in Canada and the UK where they're basically seeking to mobilize the Canadian church and the UK church and to develop funds for work in the developing world. But our casework offices, where we actually are on the ground doing victim rescue, relief, aftercare, perpetrator accountability, that's what you see here all throughout the global south. So Thailand and Cambodia, those are primarily... and the Philippines are offices where we've primarily worked on sex trafficking cases. Philippines, you'll also find a lot of cases involving illegal detention as well and sexual assault of minors or unprosecuted sexual assault in general. And then in South Asia, which is what you'll hear from in more detail from Pranitha, two of our offices work on sex trafficking crimes. And the other two offices work on labor slavery crimes. So we've split up the work in that region to deal with the most pressing need geographically. So four offices in South Asia. And then in Africa, Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda, and Zambia, the bulk of the work is related to the AIDS epidemic and the issue of property grabbing. So widows and orphans who are left completely destitute, often by their own in-laws or their own families taking their land from them. And just the basic knowledge of having a will can actually change their life, having a written will to protect their property or knowing who, knowing that they have rights has made a huge difference. And what's really fun in Africa is that we actually get to work with pastors. My mic is dying. In Africa, we work with pastors who are great authorities in their community, and we help those pastors. I'll just talk like this. We help those pastors to train their communities on their land rights. And so we've had volunteer lawyers from the United States go with us over to Africa and help train entire communities on their basic property rights. And there are also a lot of issues related to unprosecuted sexual assault in Africa as well, in all these different regions of Africa, I should say. We'll take questions at the end. I'm so sorry. Want to give make sure we are organized here with our information. But in Latin America, that's where Jaime, who you heard this morning, he is in Bolivia, and again, they're working on sex trafficking issues and unprosecuted sexual assault. Very similar with Peru, Honduras, and Guatemala. The bulk of the work surrounds those issues. Throughout the developing world, sexual assault is an epidemic, and it goes unprosecuted. Police are just often not equipped to know how to even investigate sexual assault. But actually, Miss, I'll go ahead and take your question, and then we'll move to Mark. Oh, okay. I'm not sure. I'm sure our staff would know very well, but I've been there, but I haven't heard of her particular name yet. Sounds like we should meet her. Definitely. Please do. Yeah, and that's such a great model for all of you, just to be sharing information with people that you know and letting this become a viral issue. Need to mobilize the body of Christ. So, Mark, how about you come up and tell us how to move forward? Thanks for listening to my very whirlwind presentation.
Thank you a little quick.
Okay.
So,
check.
Let's just take a second. And any questions that we do have, kind of just on the overall organization of IJM, the scriptural foundation issues, and we'll just take a minute or two, and if there are questions, we can answer those, and then we'll go on to the next step. I saw one right here. CWA. CWA stands for Case Worker Alliance. In a couple of situations, when we have done some research in the country to see if we would open up a field office, there are actually organizations that are already doing very, very similar work, and we've been able to partner with them.
And they're organizations that are nationals to the country. So our entire Peru office is, they're all Peruvian, or Honduras, they're all Honduran. So we're basically helping to fund and guide and give whatever resources we can.
In the back.
Oh boy. Don't get me off on the China issue. But the rule of law is really the primary issue. Our casework model depends upon being able to fix broken justice systems, but those justice systems have to be in at least some rudimentary form. China just simply has a completely different system, shall we say. There just isn't the type of rule of law for us to stand on and to do our casework methodology. It's not to say that we wouldn't be there, but we're only 10 years old, and we're trying to be very careful stewards of our resources. So we're going to the places of the greatest need and our greatest ability to meet those needs to begin with. A lot of the aftercare process. So we have social workers on staff in every single one of our offices who, a huge issue she was asking about, reintegration into society. There's just massive issues of shame. And in some cases, it isn't safe for a victim to go back to their family. So there's a careful assessment with each individual person. So, yeah.
The question was, are rescues only done with local authorities, or does IJM ever do those? And the answer is always with local authorities, because we're always working within the public justice system of the countries we're working in. And so we would never send an IJM person autonomous to pull people out of those situations. We want the legal system to work and the law enforcement to work. In the back.
Such as the what, did you say? Oh, the wills, right. The best thing, why don't we pause for a moment to talk about this right here. You all have this on your chair, and it would be a great gift to us if you wouldn't mind taking a moment during this class to just fill it out and to either leave it on your chair or bring it up to this table. Don't take it with you, because if you're anything like me, probably will I don't want to assume you'll lose it, but we've just found that there's a better return rate if you just leave it with us. And what we'll do is we'll take it home with us tomorrow and put you into our system and start giving you information so that you can, and we're very careful about not spamming you with information. We have a careful calendar about what kind of information will go out to you when, but we want to let you know how you can be praying for our work on a weekly basis. If you want to sign up to be a prayer partner, want to know you, let you know about benefit dinner opportunities and just in general education initiatives. But so the trip opportunities, that's something that is very case by case. I'll let Mark explain a curriculum that you can take with your church on your own trips. But if you want to do something directly with us, It's something that we'd have to work out like on the phone pretty much. We don't have a system for sending trips. We have to be careful not to overtax our staff. But, okay, so Mark's going to cover that. But it does lead me to tell you one more thing, my last plug. It's this little card that you got, IJMInstitute.org. This is right now a blog that you can go to every day. It's IJM's only official blog, and we try to keep it updated pretty much every day to give you direct contact with our work and a place where you can leave comments and ask questions. Related specifically to Christian leaders, mobilizing the church, that sort of thing, and to our casework. But this, I bring this up because in the next couple of years, we're going to be opening presences, international field schools, where you can take a team of people to an area where we have a field office and immerse yourself in our work. So it's a capability that we're trying to build out now where you can take these trips and be up closer to our work. So, but that's something that is developing. So if you have ideas on that, feel free to definitely let us know. But would appreciate it if you all be a part of the Institute community.
Just do one more question, and then we'll move forward. We'll have some more time for Q&A. Sure. My understanding is absolutely, because that's where a lot of our case referrals come from, other folks who are serving in the areas and who are embedded in communities and are knowing and serving the folks in these areas of alienation and deprivation that you've heard about and talked about. So it's a key part of what we do is building these kind of networks of relationships as well. Do you have anything to add to that? Okay, so let me, you can sit down, Bethany. Let me move forward and talk a little bit about what we do with the church, the global church. About 95% of the program of what IJM does in the world is our justice operations. It's all the things that you hear about. The rescue, the relief, the aftercare, the perpetrator accountability. But about 5 to 10% of what we do is also geared in our education department. That is working with the global church to see this shift begin to come about. And that really is born out of, I think, Gary's heart as he kind of began to become more and more aware of these issues and God began to push on him that this was something he was along with others, supposed to step up to begin in IJM, and that is the conviction that the scriptures are calling the body of Christ, not just one NGO or nonprofit or some agency or government, but the body of Christ to stand up and to move out and to take up this call of God's kingdom within the scriptures to seek justice and to serve the oppressed as part of God's call. So, we have as a primary part of our mission to work with the church and to call the church and to use Mark Labberton's words to be a catalyst to that awakening that's happening within the church. And I think you probably all here are aware of the shift that has been happening. And we get to see that a lot in the work that we do in education as we travel around, speak to churches, speak to student groups, and work with churches continually. There's this awakening that's happening within the church as people are coming alive to this sense of this renewal of this is something that God is calling us into. So part of my job in our church mobilization department is to come alongside churches to share this awareness of God's heart for justice, as well as the mission of IJM. And then to, as a person who's on the ground in the state of California anyway, to begin to work with churches to figure out, okay, well, what does that mean for us? What does partnership with IJM look like, maybe? What does just justice ministry in and through the local church look like? Now, we aren't necessarily the end-all, be-all experts of that, but we have learned some things over the years as we have interacted with churches. And so I just want to share with you a few things that we have learned. There's no cookie cutter program response. And that's one of the challenging things about justice ministry, I think, especially as we think about the church, because we're endeavoring to find something that would both capture the soul and the heart of the whole church, but not be, as we've heard, you know, so overwhelming that we lose our focus and we slip into despair, but that we can mobilize ourselves in. But we have to find our way. And that's where, as we see the Apostle Peter's words, prepare your minds for action. We're always moving towards action. Towards the process of engaging biblical justice. And we talk about the three E's: educate, explore, and engage. And it's really this journey into justice ministry that we talk about. And it's a journey. It doesn't start with point A and end with point Z, but it's this journey, and it's somewhat cyclical. So we begin talking about education. And we encourage churches a lot because we see that this is what churches naturally do, to begin a justice learning community and to begin really to seek the scriptures and deepen our conviction that this is actually what God is calling us to. Right? So we come to a conference like this, or we hear someone speak on an issue of slavery, and it is compelling to us. These stories are incredibly compelling, and our heart is drawn into this. And that's one kind of response and reaction. But it's a much longer journey into taking this into ourselves and into our hearts and finding ourselves truly convicted, because this will be challenging work as we move into it. And it will be so challenging that we might be tempted to just step away from it over time, unless our conviction is rooted in this biblical mandate. So we really encourage churches not to rush in too fast, actually, but to take time to truly dive into what the God of the universe has to say about these issues. And so we encourage you to educate yourselves. And now, of course, these are simply IJM resources that I'm showing you here. There's lots of other resources. David Batstone wrote Not For Sale recently. The Call and Response is a great film that's just come out. There's all these new resources that are out here. So just real quickly, Just Courage is a brand new book written by IJM's president, Gary Haugen, that came out this summer. Good News About Injustice You See There is a great foundational teaching on God's heart for the oppressed and his passion for justice and IJM's work. And then the other one I have listed here is a handbook that we've written called The Justice Journey. And it's a free resource that you can find on the IJM website. And it's a resource for pastors and other leaders to kind of begin to walk their church through this education, exploration, engagement phase. So a few more resources that we have here. All of these can be found on the IJM website. We travel all over the place, and we're preaching these sermons and these teachings on God's heart for justice. We want that to be replicated more and more, for leaders and pastors to be teaching from the scriptures. And so we've provided examples, both from the vantage point of giving a sermon to just giving information in a church like a Mission Minute. We have DVDs that are available for you. The We Were Free DVD is a 13-minute mini documentary on our casework in slavery. The media montage just gives you kind of a sense of who IJM is and what IJM is and what we do. And you can get all that on the website again. So, again, we're encouraging you to teach your churches about these things. Raise awareness amongst your youth that Justice Mission is a youth curriculum. Loose Change for Loosened Chains is a great way to raise awareness within your communities. I brought this You're going to be seeing this actually tomorrow if you're here and in the coming weeks at First Press Berkeley. It's a great way to simply raise funds for the rescue that the poor cannot afford. There's estimates of there being billions of dollars of just loose change that's floating around. And so there's a great awareness building campaign that you can find out at IJM.org. So then explore. So you've spent some time educating yourselves, and then we're encouraging you now to begin to explore. We're not even to the engagement phase yet. We're just talking about exploring your church community and your larger community and the world around you. So begin to ask these questions, and be very deliberate about this in your churches. Is your church actually a safe place for existing victims? That's a pretty compelling question if we begin actually diving into that locally. What are the hidden skills in your congregation? Do you have attorneys? Do you have law enforcement specialists? A lot of times we don't know these things. Are there social workers? Are there skills within your church that can be brought to bear as training for folks who are out there in the field? Existing networks of relationships that you have internationally that you can share with IJM. Is your church passionate about a particular part of the world? Most of the time as I travel around the churches, they have international partnerships already. And a lot of times those partnerships are in places where IJM has an existing field office. So explore your church. And then is your church giving to the work of biblical justice? And a lot of times for church budgets, that's a new item. And so that's something worth looking at some point. And then explore your community. IJM's focus is on the developing world, of course. But what are the likely places of violent abuse in your own community? Mark talked a little bit about that this morning. You can begin to talk to police in your community about, you know, is there a human trafficking unit nearby? How is domestic abuse issues dealt with in your community? Who is supporting those things? Talk to social workers in your community. Again, all this takes time. To move from justice learning community into what we're going to talk about in just a moment, maybe something like a justice task force. Some churches like to call their task force the Justice League. That's very fun. Justice League, yes. And then explore IJM. There's lots of information on the website, and I'll kind of move through this because I think you've seen all this. But you can visit the headquarters. We pray every day in Washington, D.C. from 11 to 11:30. Folks are welcome to join us for that. We have a global prayer gathering every year that, as prayer partners, when you fill out those cards, you will be invited to be a part of that weekend. Actually, let me go back to that last thing, field office visits, because somebody asked about that. Our field offices really aren't built with the capacity to take short-term groups, for instance, to do projects within their office. What we are built to capacity to do is when you are sending a group to work with an orphanage or something in maybe in Nairobi, for instance, we can set up a field office visit so that your group or part of your group can come spend an hour or two within that field office to get an update of what's going on and the casework that they're working on so that you can be praying for them. That's something that we can do often. And then over time, relationships build in that kind of way and information is shared as well. So we move from explore then to engage. So this is where I was referring to the Justice Task Force. So here's some IJM principles that you can begin to look at to apply in local ministry around you. Remembering that justice is rooted in this biblical witness. Justice requires prayer and community at all times. You can never really go it alone. You have to be surrounded with one another. It has to be a communal effect. We really discourage folks from just kind of creating the justice committee, kind of like the evangelism committee, the crazies who love talking to people on the airplane, you know, in your church. I shouldn't call them crazies because we're all called to evangelize, right? That's the point. We're all called to share our faith. In the same way, we're all called to this work of justice. And so really making this a movement within the church. Not everybody's going to be able to do as much as the next person, but it is the movement of the entire church. Remembering that injustice is an abuse of power. Sometimes here in the States, the injustice, as we talk about it, can just be this vague catch-all term, and we can get kind of mired in the ambiguity of it. But remembering it's an abuse of power and that it involves coercion and deception. So as you're doing your assessment in your community and in your church, you're looking for these things. And then focusing on real help for real people. So finding real neighbors that you can focus on loving. And focusing on violent oppression. Again, real people who are being abused by others with power, and there's violence involved. And then focus on work that's compelling and doable. These are just some of the things that we've learned. I keep hitting that wrong button. We've learned over time. So find your church's unique contribution. And then decide to do that one thing, that one or two things. So we have a new program that's called the Justice Church Program. This is a specific thing in terms of partnership with IJM, where you can actually designate your church giving to a particular field office or area of casework. And then you're going to receive information, podcasts from that field office on a regular basis. And figure out if you have folks that you can share with IJM. I think Bethany was referring to this a little bit earlier. Where are your international partnerships? We have another tool called As You Go Mission Training. If you have short-term mission groups that you send out, here's a great new tool for you. You can incorporate justice and incorporating the heart of God's heart for justice in that training when you're going to build homes for Habitat for Humanity in some place. Well, incorporate God's heart for justice in that. That's through this tool. So these are just a number of different things that you can look at. Okay, so the journey towards becoming a IJM model church. We have these churches that we call model churches. It doesn't mean that they're perfect churches by any means. It just means that they're a church that has been able to say, we want to get started. We want to get going. We know we need to act. And they're doing something. They're doing it imperfectly, as we all are, but they're doing something. And they have champions in their church who can begin to articulate how they're in partnership with IJM, as well as what they're doing both internationally and locally in regard to justice ministry specifically. So a couple examples. Aftercare models. The River Church in San Jose and Adventure Christian up in the Sacramento area have both been engaged in helping to start or support aftercare facilities, specifically aftercare facilities that IJM is in partnership with. They've provided staff to those aftercare facilities. They've provided funds. They've provided folks who've gone to those locations to provide training for staff. And as Bethany mentioned, that takes time. That takes relationship. None of that can happen kind of overnight. But as that relationship is developed, some of those things, some of these model churches have been able to spring up. A Justice Church plant. There's a church down in Torrance, California, New Hope South Bay, that specifically was planted with justice at the very center and the core of its mission. It's a small church, but they're endeavoring to do everything they do from staff development to church growth, keeping in mind how are we going to serve the weak and the oppressed in our local area as well as internationally. And they have also started a nonprofit alongside of them. And then this justice worship model, now that's just a term that I developed for First Presbyterian Berkeley, so that I can put it into a category for people, helping folks to know that something that First Press Berkeley is doing is trying to bring justice right into the center of its worshiping life, and not have this segregated kind of experience where justice is over here and evangelism is over here and worship is over here, but right into the center after, again, Mark's teaching over the years. So those are just a few examples. Now, on the IJM website, you can find more models, stories, and churches can kind of go and say, you know, well, is this church kind of similar to ours in some way, and would this be a model that we could follow? And then the last thing, that as churches begin to engage, we have these now this justice campaigning. How can churches get involved in helping to advocate for justice issues? And I'm going to bring Eileen Campbell up right now, who's our Justice Campaigns Director, and she's going to talk a little bit about this issue of justice campaigns.
Thank you, Mark. My name is Eileen Campbell again, and before coming to IJM, I spent about 5 years working at a group called Physicians for Human Rights. And while I was there, I was working on an HIV/AIDS, Global AIDS Treatment Access campaign, basically trying to increase the amount of resources and the commitment of the U.S. government toward providing life-saving treatment for the poorest living with HIV. And what was really exciting about working on an issue like that, at that time was that not only did we go from seeing the U.S. government spend $0 to creating the largest program for global health in U.S. history, but what was really exciting for me, too, was that it was this time where we saw the left and the right and religious and secular and people from all different ends of the spectrum come together on an issue, because it just seized people's hearts in this way, and they were able to sort of put these ideological differences aside to really commit themselves to change. And I think that kind of movement we saw for public health is the kind of movement we need now for public justice systems. And that's the kind of movement that at IJM we're really trying to cultivate with people that support our work. Because our government really has the capacity to make a hugely positive impact through political will, through reporting systems, and through funding. And I'm going to just talk really briefly about some of our legislative goals for the next couple of years. And I just want to reiterate that these are the kind of goals at IJM that we literally cannot achieve by ourselves, because although we have great relationships with members of Congress, all of their offices, they would much prefer to talk to people who actually have the potential of voting for them in the next election, which is all of you. And what I think is great about that is that, you know, we hear about all of these things and, you know, some of us might want to be that lawyer or that police investigator in Mumbai or in La Paz, but you know, what's great about this way of getting involved is that it actually requires that we get involved where we are. And our power and our leverage actually comes from just being right where we live and sort of leveraging that gift and that power that comes with our citizenship. And I think it's just one way of being that truthful witness that Jaime was talking about earlier today. So one of our legislative goals for the coming year is around a piece of legislation called the William Wilberforce Trafficking Victims Protection Act, or TVPA for short. And this is a landmark human rights piece of legislation that started in 2000, very bipartisan commitment to this legislation, and it established the Trafficking in Persons Office at the State Department. So this is really the major vehicle through which the U.S. government engages issues like trafficking and slavery. It needs to be reauthorized every 2 years, which basically means they need to recommit to it. Congress needs to recommit to it every 2 years and make sure that it gets funded again. This year, the House passed it, but it got derailed in the Senate for issues that some of which had to do with the legislation and the differences in the versions, but some of which were just entirely political, and it kind of fell off the map. And so now they've adjourned without passing this legislation. And Senator Harry Reid has committed to a lame duck session coming back in November. And one of the action alerts we have on our website right now is trying to encourage senators to contact Harry Reid and ask him to make sure that this piece of legislation is one of the things that gets considered when they come back in November. It's sort of unlikely, given the current situation in our country, that this is actually going to be very high on the agenda, which is okay, because what it means is next year we are all going to have the opportunity to make sure that this piece of legislation is really high on their agenda. And we're going to have actually the potential to make this legislation even better. But that all requires you making sure that this legislation and these issues are really on the agenda for your members of Congress. And we really need your help to do that. The postcard campaign is one of the really sort of simple introductory ways that we're starting to do that. But we're also hoping that people will be willing to actually meet with their members' offices here in California, for example. Has anyone ever done that? Has anyone ever attended an in-district meeting with your senators or your representative? 1, 2, 3? That's great. See, for all the rest of us, the problem is there's like all these people going in and like talking about potholes and stuff. And there's just not enough people going in and talking about human rights and talking about justice issues. And so that's why we all need to get educated and trained so that we can really be the bridge builders between these issues that we care about and sort of making the people in power aware of what they can do about it. So that's one of the things that I'm really excited to work with all of you on. Anyone who's willing to actually step into that place of power and to bring these issues before members of Congress and their offices, I'm really happy to walk you through that process. It's much easier than a lot of us think it is. Like Mark said, I think the really important important thing to remember is that we just don't have to be experts on these issues. Basically, the most important thing that you can do is say, you know, I live in California, and you're my person, and I care about this issue, and I need to know what you're going to do about it. And you don't need to know exactly how the appropriations process works or anything like that. You know, I think you need to be informed, and we can help you be informed and prepared, but you don't need to be an expert. So that's just one thing to keep in mind. The other thing that we're really going to try and do in the next year is to really plus up the amount of money for the Trafficking in Persons Office. This is an office that is in charge of the entire U.S. government response to trafficking worldwide. And they do all of the reporting worldwide on what's happening on trafficking and slavery as well. They have a budget of about $4 million, and they make about $15 million in grants to NGOs that around the world that are working on these issues, which in the terms of the entire U.S. budget is like a rounding error. I mean, it's just not nearly commensurate with the need. And so we really need to make that a priority for appropriators, for members of Congress and the Foreign Relations Committee, both of which your senators are on in California. And the other thing that's sort of a little bit further down the pike for us is working on trade reform so that we can really make sure we can enforce slavery-free production standards that are already on the books but are just not being enforced in terms of what the United States is importing. So that's something that we're also looking toward in the near future. And the basic strategy that we are working on this year is this abolition senator campaign that I talked about earlier. And basically just we're approaching this in a very relational, very bridge-building kind of way, and very nonpartisan. We're just really trying to make sure that people like you that really care about these issues and really have a heart for justice are reaching out to those in power to enact just policies that are going to help those in need and those who need rescue. So that's basically what's on the map for us. There are some other ways to participate. You can sign up. You can, you know, we can let you know when there are opportunities for action. You know, we're not going to bombard you like Bethany said, but you know, if this TVPA legislation is coming up for a vote, we can let you know. You know, so you can call and make sure that your member shows up and votes for it. We also have a whole new set of advocacy tools that are on our website, and we can let you know where those are. That sort of walks you through different ways of getting involved, like meeting with your members of Congress, like writing a letter to the editor in your local paper, things like that. And we're also, just one last thing, is we're going to be having our first advocacy day at IJM after our global prayer gathering in March. So if any of you are considering coming to the Global Prayer Gathering, that's something you might want to keep in mind. We'd love to have you be part of that. We're going to do some advocacy training, and then we're all going to meet with our members of Congress the next day. So I think that's all I have. Do you want to open it up for questions for the last few minutes?
Global Prayer Gathering, that's something that Mark Labberton comes to every year and helps to lead. So if you have any questions about what that looks like, feel free just to ask him or other people from this church. So questions? Right up here. Yeah, sure. I'm sorry, where did you see that?
Oh,
great. Good. Thank you for asking about that. It's definitely in the Institute category. So we've been trying to cover all the different bases of action. But with the IJM Institute, the goal is to work with leaders. So that could mean certainly someone who wants to be able to teach a Sunday school class, but it also means someone who wants their entire seminary to adopt justice at the core of their curriculum, which is one of my goals. So there's the college level of working with campus chapters, but what I work on primarily is more at the graduate level. So graduate schools, theology and ethics programs, seminaries, divinity schools, that sort of thing. So trying to help professors adopt biblical justice curriculum into the DNA of what they're teaching so that they're shaping the way their leaders are coming out and what they're being equipped to do. So I'd love to talk with you about that more on the side, too. So are you in an academic community yourself? Oh, excellent. Okay, yeah. And that would be another topic. So let's talk about that a little bit more offline. That would be great. Go ahead.
The reason is we just have acquired the web tools to do that.
Eileen's only been with us a couple of weeks, so
we're really just getting this process going. So yeah, we have just in the last month or so invested in the kind of tools that will allow people to connect with their members of Congress through our website. So making it just as easy as possible. That's right. Yeah, we're updating it every month at least, so that people are aware of what's happening on Capitol Hill regarding these issues that we care about. Yeah.
Sure. The way it would work, and I'll try to make this quick, but there would be like a J term. Are you all familiar with that idea? So in private schools, they often have during January an extra semester of sorts. So in the public school system, we'd have to probably more focus on the summer term. So there'll be a January winter term where for probably 10 days to 2 weeks, you can go overseas and work in. Like if you were to go to Thailand, for example, we would be renting out a facility of a school that's there, and people would come and deeply immerse in biblical justice teaching and then do work in the field. So they would be meeting clients and meeting our staff and kind of learning on the ground. The summer would be a longer experience. So, and actually, I should clarify that it's not necessarily just for college students. So the whole J-term analogy is based on a college model, but this probably the most people who will use the institute school will be post-college, we're imagining. It'd be a pretty wide age demographic. And then the summer would be anywhere from 3 weeks to perhaps even 6 or 7 weeks of significant commitment where you're moving overseas for several weeks and deeply immersing. It's something that is we're just starting to move forward. You all might have met my colleague Laurel, who is here. She just left today to go to Cambodia and Thailand and start our initial groundwork of learning from other schools that are already in existence and just starting to ask questions and best practices and that sort of thing. So about 2010 is when you might see a pilot school happen. In 2011 is our target for actually rolling out the full robust institute school. So more information in terms of the precise demographic and exactly what you would do in the school. Just be in contact with the IJAM Institute and we can keep you updated as it's developing. Me. So yeah, if you go to ijaminstitute.org, you can contact us through there or I have my business card up here too. So. Undergraduate students get involved with the West Coast office, have coffee with Mark. I'm just volunteering your time. But
the West Coast office is currently located in, like, Broad.
Yeah.
Where? I live in San Francisco. But California is. About 30% of the churches that IJAM engages with in the United States are in California. Mm-hmm. So California.
The internship question, we have a phenomenal intern program. I can't say enough about it. Fall, spring, and winter, three different times. Fall, winter, and summer. The summer is by far the most competitive season to get into, but you can do the same internship program any of those three seasons. You can do it in our HQ office, especially if you're undergrad or law school, or if you are post-grad or a social worker or an attorney, you can give of yourself for 6 months to a year and go live in the field and do this work with us. That's a huge need, and we call those fellowships, not internships. So
we have time for one more question.
I'm sorry, just really quick. Along those lines,
Let's talk about that offline to get to another question.
Okay, one more question.
Great question. Absolutely.
Also, they're like a 501c.
Yeah, 501c3. Yep.
Yeah, that's that. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Since
I'll
you
pay
asked.
You later. I mentioned the Justice Church program. If you're a part of a church and you're in California, please feel free to get in touch with me. If you're an individual or you have individuals in your church, we have a new program called the Freedom Partner Program. I just have one of these as an example. You can get all the information online. But it's a great monthly donor kind of program where you get some communication from IJM on a regular basis, and you can just designate your giving again to a certain area of caseworker, geography, that kind of thing.
It's called Just 50. So you're $50 a month. You find out exactly what that $50 is going to. You can target it. Get podcasts from Gary, that sort of thing, and certainly can get more than $50 a month. But
so there's some other connection cards here if you want to take them to your church. There's some brochures you can take as well, and some of our cards, and if you want to communicate with us about anything.
And please do leave your contact cards with us. That's a great help to us. Really appreciate
it. So I think there's 15 minutes break, and then Pranitha will be in this room, and then the other seminars are going on as well. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much.